Welcome to the Autistic License Podcast. I'm Leo in London.
I'm Shauna, and I'm in Carrickfergus in Northern Ireland.
We invite you to listen in on our conversations as we get to know one another and experiment with unmasking in an autistic space. We talk about what it means to discover we're autistic as adults, especially with established careers as therapists. Here, we'll let people know that autistic therapists exist to contribute to the evolving neurodiversity dialogue and with each other to create an engaging and dynamic space. Everyone's welcome. You don't need to be autistic or to be a therapist to join us. We're sure you'll find something of interest and connection here.
Falling down a rabbit hole. Thank you for
pulling
me out.
Yeah, you were. So, Leo, if somebody asked you today, why it's a good idea for two autistic people, us, to start a podcast, what would you say?
That's a really lovely way of asking the question. If it existed, I'd be listening to it. I'd really want to hear somebody like me in more than one way, so two ways, an autistic and a therapist, talking about their experience. That would be really interesting to me, and I can't imagine what that would be like if I wasn't autistic. But if I wasn't, I think I'd also be very interested to hear what one sounded like. What does an autistic therapist sound like? How do you do that? I would imagine I would be thinking.
Yeah.
So I quite like I'd quite like the idea of the people like me thing initially, I think.
Yeah. And in terms of your background for speaking and podcasting and things like that, do you want to share a little bit about where your enthusiasm for that type of media comes from?
Yeah, I don't. I wonder why. Actually, I've just had a thought about that. So I've always been very passionate, I'm going to say, about radio, the whole medium of radio, spoken word particularly. And it might be because when I was little, I really didn't like the dark and the quiet when I went to bed. That would really frighten me, and I didn't like it at all. And I would always, I'd be very comfortable. I know that my mum would save the washing up, for example, until I'd gone to bed so that I would hear the clitter clatter, which is what I would always ask for when I was very little. It was very comforting to know that there was activity.
Yeah.
And eventually, when I was really quite young, probably, my parents bought me a little transistor radio so that I could listen to the radio quietly to go to sleep. So I slept with a radio on for years, all the way into my early adulthood. So that's, I never thought about that before. That's probably why that's, there's huge comfort associated with sound. And then I as a kid as well, I was fascinated by tape recorders, and I used to make pretend radio programs when I was very little. Sometimes with my sister, I'd drag her in as well. And then when I was 12, 13, I joined my local hospital radio station. Because I don't know about elsewhere in the world, but in the UK, a lot of hospitals have their own radio stations for the patients and staff. And I joined one. And I was, I did that for a while. And then I ended up doing my degree in speech radio. Because that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to work in speech radio. And then I got sidetracked into many, many other things over the years. Ending up as a therapist in the world of podcasting. And thinking that that would be a really good thing, that I should do a podcast, but I never really found a little niche or something I was comfortable talking about enough to justify putting a podcast out. But I got obsessed by podcasts when I first discovered those. I know exactly when that was. I was working at the BBC at the time, and it was 2012 because the Olympics were on in London. And I discovered a couple of podcasts that I got really kind of obsessed over, and I didn't listen to music for a year and a half, which was very, very unusual for me because I listened to music, or used to, like 24 hours a day. So that was the yes. So it's been what? What's the year? So 11 years, really, I've been thinking about what might I do. And for the last few years, I've thought probably something as a therapist, because you have interesting conversations. I've got stories, and but I still didn't have a focus. And then I got my autistic diagnosis last year, just over a year ago, and then met you through a Facebook group. And that just, yeah, then it suddenly, we both suddenly clicked on the same day. I think, in fact, it was your idea that we could get together and talk about our therapeutic lives as autistic therapists. And that's, yeah, I've been really, really excited about it ever since. Here we are, day one.
Here we are, day one. Leo, I'm...
Your turn.
You know...
Or is there... Yeah, go on.
No, I want to come back to you. I want to come back to you because I am just so touched and so, you know, just kind of amazed at how, you know, the more that we talk, because Leo and I have been speaking for about a year in various contexts before today.
I just want to butt in there. You just did, so I'm going to leave this in, but you just did something wonderful. You spoke to a third person. You said Leo and I, somebody else. That's so exciting. It's so exciting. I don't want to give you a complex about it, but that was just so exciting. That was lovely.
I heard it. So anyway, back. Welcome back in. Leo does get excited sometimes.
It should be pointed out, I got a dual diagnosis. I'm ADHD too. Yes. You may spot that sometimes.
I love the fact that I have heard bits. We've heard bits and pieces of each other's story before. I have never heard that aspect of how soothing the spoken voice was to you whenever you were little. I've never appreciated that dimension to it. And there's something even about that. And, you know, you didn't know you were autistic at the time, but it fits as well with like just needing there to be some connection in the blackness and the silence. And,
oh, my goodness.
You know?
You see, telling you the little narrative just then, that was the first time that I'd ever put my thing about comfort with the radio at night. With my interest and passion for radio, I'd never made that connection, and you've just added to it there by pointing out an absolute truth there, that was absolutely part of being an autistic child.
Yeah,
having that, maintaining that connection, being incredibly disturbed by not having it.
That's what I heard.
Thank you,
that's
Shana.
What I heard. Oh,
thank you.
This is, you know, this is an example of why we kind of were thinking that a podcast might be a good idea, because something happens when we dialogue about things and we tell each other things that is different and that feels like gets really, really alive. And that's why we wondered whether other people might be interested to hear it. So my background is very different from Leo's in that the spoken word and using my voice to express myself, to communicate, was not a comfortable place for me.
Mm-hmm.
I guess as I was growing up, I realised that I was good at writing, like assignments in school, probably because as well, now that I'm thinking about it, that medium allowed me to refine and refine and refine and refine and hand in a finished product rather than risking there being like a block in the middle of it that people would see. I guess that is part of the issue with speaking for me. I was always a very shy child. I still do see myself as shy without putting a stigma around that word. It just is what it is, really. So, like, there would be this fear that if I would speak in front of people, that I would suddenly have a block and people would be waiting for me to speak and I wouldn't be able to say anything. So I would effectively be non-speaking at that moment. And it's not uncommon for autistic people to experience this when we're under a lot of stress. Sometimes part of our survival is to shut down, involuntarily shut down in that way.
Yeah.
But even in sort of in a less extreme way, we could get it on a sort of a moment-to-moment basis where speaking would be difficult. And I guess that a podcast in this kind of setting alleviates some of that, because if it were to happen, we could stop, it could be edited out, or it could even be used as a way to sort of illustrate in a compassionate kind of a way, this is what many autistic people experience within their life. So I just was not somebody who would be comfortable speaking and or that people would see as comfortable in that sort of way. There would be shame attached to it, I guess, and some anxiety attached to it, which would be hard to overcome. Also, kind of as a somebody who's a late diagnosed autistic and who survived in life by staying under the radar and getting through and by listening and paying a lot of attention to other people, and then became a therapist, of course, you can see how that works. The sort of not drawing attention to yourself fits with not speaking as well. And also fits with just there being a bit of a lack of expression publicly, even if I was able to express myself privately and in other ways. So this is very different. This invitation is very different. And I remain unsure how it's going to go, but trusting enough of the relationship that Leo and I have created here that I'm willing to give it a go.
Except that it was your idea.
Well, no, actually, to be fair, I said, have you ever considered
that's doing true, a actually. That's true. And actually, we actually met because of a podcast, at least on my side, because I listened to the Square Peg podcast, which I highly recommend. And that there was a guest on that show a couple of years ago, Max Marno, and they run the Autistic Counsellors and Psychotherapists Facebook group, which at the time was quite small, and I immediately joined it. And within a few weeks also, so did you, because I've just looked up the dates when we joined, at the beginning of 2022. And then through interactions there, you put up a post wondering if there were any of us that might be interested in some supervision. That's how we met. So we only ever met online until very, very recently. We have actually met face-to-face once now, because you came over to England for a conference. So we met up, and that was brilliant. And other than that, though, we've just been doing this, which is what we're doing now, meeting over Zoom.
That's right. I did not listen to that podcast, actually. I never really listened to podcasts very much. And I listen to them occasionally now, and especially when I can't sleep, because it kind of helps me not to get annoyed about not being able to sleep, because I've got something to focus on. And then,
well, there's something.
It seems to trick me into going to sleep eventually. That's another topic I'm sure we'll cover, sleep and autistic people.
Yes.
So I didn't listen to that podcast, but I knew about the group and joined the group. And it's very interesting when you talk about that day that I sent an email and said, does anybody want to join a peer group? Because I have this aspect of who I am that could, I mean, the jury's out, could be ADHD aspects, the right one.
Yeah,
but
no, yeah.
There is this, you know, I'm quite a traditional autistic person. I hit a lot of the stereotype markers, but, you know, there's every so often there's this impulsive streak that just does things and initiates and, you know, behaves in a way that normally I wouldn't. And that was one of those days whenever I just thought, you know, there's people out there, there's hundreds of people out there everywhere in the world. You know, does anybody want to meet at this time? And Leo came and someone else came as well on that day. And, you know, it just all felt, you know, kind of like things just aligned, you know, because some people try and do this kind of thing and there could be 50 people interested, but there can't be a time. And I did it very kind of quickly and like, this is a time that suits. Do you want to just turn up? And it was a big deal to kind of just turn up. It could have been anybody, you know, and to start the relationship from there. It's not, whenever I think about it, it's not anything, like I'm not the kind of person that will initiate conversation with people in places. It's quite hard to get to know me, and quite hard for me to put myself out there. So things like that are interesting to me, how that happened, and then how we got talking about the and we're talking about radio DJ history, and that's where it came up. But yeah, it's interesting because there is this big group of autistic therapists that is international, that Leo has spoken about. So there's starting to be information out there about, and people have started to do various webinars and things like that about autism and maybe being an autistic therapist. So what is it, Leo, like, what do we think that we can do to complement all of that or be different? I'm asking myself too. I just am a bit sick of talking and I'm gonna hand it over to you.
I don't think and I'm not suggesting you think I need this, but I don't think I need to have a higher purpose, that it needs to do something useful, because I think just by existing, you know, the more voices the better. I don't feel a need, and this actually would have been one of the blocks that I've had for years in what should I podcast about, is I've got this thing, I think, and a lot of people do, that it has to be unique somehow. You know, it has to be an unfilled gap or something, and I'm less bothered by that. Now, I actually think the more that's around, the better, the more awareness, the more normalised, then that's great. And if we're just two more voices, then fantastic. But we won't be, we will be unique, because there's only us that are us. And so that would make it different. But I think things will also come up. I'm very interested, you know, talking to the listener now, that people get in touch and join the conversation somehow, or suggest things, or what do you ask some questions? That broadly, really. I don't want to narrow that down. But, you know, to have a bit of a relationship as well with other people, and what they might, you know, whether they're from the world of therapy and or neurodivergence or not, there'll be things that they might want to expand on or know more about, or I don't know. So to develop, you know, a wider, looser relationship with the people who tune in. But primarily, I think, now I'm thinking it through, it's listening. This is what I would get out of listening to us if I were not me, is what we described in the intro and what you just talked about, the this bit where we're going to continue finding out all kinds of stuff about each other and making connections for ourselves, but also for the other one. Mm-hmm. Like you mm-hmm. did before, you know, with the links between radio and autism and being an autistic kid and mm-hmm. connection, all those kinds of things.
Yes, yes. I think that I was asking because there's a part of me that is asking myself, you know, but what makes us different? Maybe it's like an insecurity or, you know, like not really having the answer. And knowing that we just have to do this. And then there might be words to articulate it afterwards. And I suppose not wanting to duplicate anything around like education or, you know, feeling like, yes, we're therapists and yes, we're autistic, but actually we're not necessarily here to say, here's a hot topic in autism or here's a hot topic in therapy, or that actually we're two people who have those kind of, I suppose we've got therapeutic skills and relational skills that we can support each other to bring out of each other these kind of this kind of dialogue, but actually it might not be educational in the traditional sense of like, let's look at masking today or let's look at burnout. Or I think that's where I have a little bit of a block with it, where I don't want to reinvent the wheel on that kind of thing. And it's probably more the way in which we talk to each other and the way in which we interact that might actually be interesting as well, because that feels different when it's autistic communication rather than cross neurotype communication. And like, if we were to attempt to interview each other, it would sound very different because we would be jumping in. But that's all part of what we're sharing, and I guess what people can't really know and identify with unless they hear it, because it's very hard to describe. So I think there's something around that of sort of being willing to be seen in that way, rather than as like a kind of a polished, we know some things because we've researched this, or because, you know, we are therapists or something like that. That I really want to, from the beginning, kind of say we're two human beings and we're talking to each other, and you might be able to pick up autistic ways of communicating there, and that might help you to accept yourself, but it also might, you know, not you, I mean people mm-hmm. listening, you know, and it might also help non-autistic people to sort of understand a bit better the autistic people in their lives who maybe push their buttons, or, you know, they don't quite get, for, you know, to use that example, interrupting, because to us it doesn't feel like interrupting, it feels like relating.
And I'm really wanting to do it right now, funnily enough, because that's such a great reason as well, and that hadn't consciously occurred to me, about say a neurotypical person who hears a speak and then gains an understanding of what an autistic person in their life might actually be doing or thinking, or, you know, that's really nice. I like that a lot. And that's certainly the case for me. I've talked before, I think, about, you know, how sometimes I've reframed my view of somebody because I found out they're autistic, and I've realized, oh my God, I'm holding loads of prejudices actually about a person. And now I know they're autistic. That makes so much more sense. Mm.
Yeah.
That's really, oh, that's great. I really like that.
So in autistic to autistic communication, as you've kind of heard, maybe even in this short time between mm-hmm. Leo and I, mm-hmm. there's overlaps all the time and simultaneous threads going on, that may be ADHD as well as autism. Yes. As I said, the jury's out on my end. The jury's in on Leo's end.
Very much.
So the, yeah, it might be that kind of, might be overlaps that are different in sort of neurodivergent conversation that looks like interrupting, but it's the way that we communicate.
Yes.
There needs to be all of that out at the same time. And there's another dimension as well of self-disclosure, relevant self-disclosure, particularly as it pertains to autistic trauma and autistic lack of understanding in the world. There's something very, very profound when another autistic person says to you, yeah, me too,
which
is kind of lost. Whenever in non-autistic communication, and that's why we are rightly told in our training, be really, really, really careful of that, because, you know, everybody's different and you shouldn't blur your experience with somebody else's. And it can actually be unhelpful for neurotypical people because it makes them feel often not so well understood because things are being blurred. But that comes from actually, I think, a place of privilege where if you've grown up as the majority and most people around you seem to experience the world in a similar enough way to you, your brain seems to function similarly and it does not appear like everyone else is really different to you, or more like you are really different to everyone else, which is the autistic experience, then it's not helpful for someone to say me too, because it's like, well, yeah, so we are all like that, but I need you to hear the nuance and the special thing I'm saying to you.
Exactly.
Whereas the flip side of that for an autistic person is that they may never have heard me too. Yeah. They have not had the experience of someone being able to perceive the world in a similar way.
That's right.
So there's so much healing that comes out of me too. Mm-hmm. Carefully, mindfully, but it's a big difference in autistic to autistic therapy. So that's a, you know, so that's, there's two things there. There's the overlapping communication and there's also the disclosure element.
That's exactly right, yeah. And what you were saying, to go back to what you were saying before about, you know, not necessarily having a specific serious topic to go through, because that might be replicating stuff that already kind of exists or has been specifically discussed about. We probably, I would imagine, will do that because it'll come up. But when we do, again, it will be our particular take on that. And that will be different.
Yeah.
By the nature of us as individuals and how we are in relationship with each other as well. That'll be, that'll be unique in its own right. So when I talk about masking, probably what will happen is similar to what happens in some of my therapeutic relationships and sessions, is that, you know, there's a fair bit of disclosing that goes on and I talk about my experience of that.
And I'm aware too, listening to you, that there's a demand avoidant kind of part of me that's kind of going, oh, like, I don't want to have to do a whole pile of research and tell people about what everyone else thinks about masking. And then, you know, like that kind of traditional thing.
Absolutely.
Do you know,
absolutely.
It's like just to kind of say, this is, you know, and weave it in and out like we've just done. Like we've just done there, like, feels so good. It feels so releasing from that sort of demand to do a whole topic on that and cover it and have it, you know, then available. This is what you think about masking. Because the other thing that I'm aware of about me is that I change and I evolve really, really quickly. So that then, like, what I say one week will not come out exactly the same the next week or the next month. And I think there's something for me that has made me cautious about speaking before, because it's almost like, well, then it's as if you don't mean what you say, or it's as if, you know, did you really think that? Did you really believe that? Did you really feel that? But there's something, especially since realizing that I'm autistic, and the how rapid the development process is, that it just can't be tied down yet. And I've just realized that's partly why talking at the minute works, because if I were to write something and then try and refine it and go back to it, it would have already changed by the time I did that.
Yeah.
Whereas if I can dialogue something through, then it doesn't feel so stagnant. But that also feels risky to do this. Like, I feel like I've got cautious parts of me kind of, you know, going, oh, well, you're going to be talking a load of shit then, Shauna. You're going to change it all a few months later.
But this is one of the things I talk about within the world of being autistic and the autistic experience, is that it's another description of what being a scientist is. It's that, you know, you have some beliefs and assumptions, and they're always open to change. To sound a little deep and pretentious, it's an onward yearning to find truth and objectivity. Yeah. And so I may well say something, and you're right, that's the thing about the web, is that something goes out and it's there forever in some form.
Uh-huh.
But I think we're all used to that fact, and some people, and I would include us in this, are open to reforming their opinions based on evidence and experience. So yeah, absolutely something that I say today I may completely do a 180 on in 18 months' time, because I'll have had an experience which sways me, and that's, or some knowledge that wasn't there before. I think that's a good thing.
I think it's a good thing now that you've explained it to me. I think I'm wanting to send this message out of, like, please don't hold me to the things that I say.
Yeah.
Because they just will have, like, you're going to know that version of me from that, of what I said on that day. And it's always been something, and I'm not going to say always, I've noticed it a lot more in recent years, because the autism dynamic just adds so many new lenses to things. But I have at other times sort of really tried to find truths and values to live by and different groups, and so I can see what the quest was there, but I'm really not like that anymore. So it really is all open for development and change and growth, which is lovely to share. But it's also like, I really want, I want people to join us in the process, and like you said, invite people to come in and dialogue, and also want, you know, well, maybe it's about me releasing myself from consistency with, you know, what I'm saying now and what I might say in a month or in a year, even though there's going to be a record of it. Like, it's just the fact that it's not necessarily consistent over time doesn't make it any less valuable. And I'm speaking to myself, you know, it's almost like I'm making a case to myself this actually goes into the podcast or not. But just that sense of there is such a rapid change and development process. And maybe that's the hallmark of late diagnosis of autism. That is just something that is very common, and that people will recognize that suddenly you feel like, you know, there's aspects of yourself you just have no clue about and that you need to allow out, and you need to just let them live and let them develop. And some of them are very, very, very young because they've been pushed down for so long, and they need to just be free to grow and develop. It's really interesting, and I know we're nearly at time. It's very interesting because this is making me think about our therapeutic modalities, Leo, because you know, I use that parts kind of language, which comes from IFS, internal family systems, and Leo, you're trained in TA, transactional analysis, and that's there's right. so many, you know, kind of similarities in how we see the different parts within ourselves, mm-hmm. whether we call mm-hmm. them the parent or the child, indeed, or indeed. Parts or whatever, and it's kind of another example of where we might bring in that therapeutic lens when we're working with our own experiencing and our psyche, which we haven't done a lot of, but I could see us doing it in the future.
Yeah. I think so. Well, let's see how much of that made sense when I do an edit, but also the feedback we get, autistic license, LICENCE@gmail.com. Let us know that you heard this. Let us know what you think of it. Ask some questions.
Yes. Make some comments. All welcome.
And that's what you're talking about. Curious. But that's actually what you were just talking about, isn't it? You never want to get to stasis. You just want curiosity to grow and grow and grow. And you want to encourage that in other people. That's certainly my kind of...
All welcome. Curiosity, feedback. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
There you go.
See you next week. Bye. Thank you so much for listening to the Autistic License podcast. We're very open to feedback and suggestions for future topics. You can connect with us via Instagram, Facebook at autisticlicense.com or via email at autisticlicense@gmail.com. If you're interested in therapy with an autistic counsellor, you can visit thrivingautistic.org.